Chapter 11 Organizational Culture and Management and Related Ideas. Introduction and Definitions. What is organizational culture? If you ask most people this question, they might not be able to provide an answer. However, if you ask what does culture mean, they might say it is the heritage of an ethnic group. If you put the same question to an anthropologist, the response might be the totality of a human society's tradition of thought and its expression in behavior. This was a quote, Allen A. 1980, pages 626. The definition for organizations and their management is similar, but it is not exactly the same. This becomes apparent from the following definitions of organizational culture, which was taken from the indicated sources. 1. A unique pattern of shared assumptions, values, and norms that shape the organization's socialization activities, language, symbols, and practices. This was a quote, Hal Riegel, D. and Slocum, Jr., J.W. 1996 Management, 7th ed. Pages 530. 2. An organization's norms, beliefs, attitudes, and values. This was a quote, Luthans F. and Hojets R. 1992 Business 2nd ed. Pages 205. 3. A common perception held by the organization's members. A system of shared meaning. Robbins, S.P. 1996 Organizational Behavior 7th ed. Pages 681. The above definitions do not provide enough detail to explain the concept of organizational culture. I will define and explain the term in more detail in the following paragraph. Organizational culture is the shared beliefs and related behavior patterns held by management and its employees. The word shared means that a large majority of the people that are involved with the organization have more or less a similar set of beliefs in relation to the organization. The word beliefs means organization-related assumptions, attitudes, norms, fantasies, values, any mental data. The term beliefs also applies to any mental cognitions that are related to ways of doing things in the organization, ways of evaluating in the organization, ways of perceiving reality within the organizational environment, ways of responding in the organizational context, ways of communicating in the organization, including jargon and style of language. The words organization-related mean assumptions, attitudes, norms, fantasies, values, or any ideas that are relevant to the organization and are believed to be either important, correct, proper, or appropriate for the organizational environment by a majority of the people involved with the organization. The words related behavior patterns mean in this definition ways of doing things, actions or inhibitions that result from the organization-related beliefs. The words held by management and its employees suggest an important component of organizational culture. It is not strictly a property of management. It includes the beliefs, assumptions, attitudes, norms, fantasies, values, or any mental cognition the employees have in relation to the organization. The organizational-related beliefs of an employee develop from experiences and the learning process within the organization. The experiences and learning interact with the personality and societal culture and subculture that the employees had before they worked at the organization. Thus, management does not have total control over the development of an organizational culture. Management can try to instill a specific set of beliefs in its employees, but this effort may or may not be successful. An organization can also try to hire people who have a set of beliefs that fit the organizational culture. However, it might be quite difficult or impossible to find enough employees that have the required belief system. In general, people who are involved with an organization develop the beliefs and related behavior patterns of the culture in a socialization process. That is, they learn the appropriate beliefs and related behavior patterns from the organizational environment, especially from other employees. They learn the appropriate behavior patterns by inadvertently or intentionally watching and copying the behavior patterns of individuals of similar job status. Employees might also learn the organizational-related beliefs and related behavior patterns from training supplied by management, which can involve individual instructions, seminars, films, and even reading material. The individual does not necessarily develop all of the beliefs and behavior patterns associated with the organizational culture. They develop the beliefs and behavior patterns that are related to their roles in the organization. This, and other factors, can sometimes lead to the development of organizational subcultures. Organizational subcultures. What is an organizational subculture? It is shared beliefs and related behavior patterns held by a section of the organization, such as a specific division, department, or a specific group or category of workers, which is usually a variation of the organizational culture. That is, Certain segments of the people involved in the organization develop a shared set of beliefs and related behavior patterns that differentiate them from other individuals involved with the organization. This concept is analogous to a subculture in the larger society. An organizational subculture can have beliefs and behavior patterns that can range from highly functional to highly dysfunctional, from the perspective of management. For example, employees that work in a factory might have a subculture and related belief system that restrict the productivity of the workers. The Hawthorne studies reveal such a situation, which is apparent from a book written by the original researchers, F.R.T. Z. J. Roethlisberger, and William J. Dixon, 1939 and 1967 Management and the Worker. The subculture and related beliefs of the factory workers that were studied in the Hawthorne plan can be summed up by the following four statements and related quotations: there is a finite amount of work available. If the employees work too fast, some of the workers will be laid off because there will not be enough work, or they might cut the rate of pay, or some other adverse consequences might manifest. This belief can be seen in the two quotations that follow. If we exceed our day's work by any appreciable amount, something will happen. The rate might be cut, the rate might be raised, the bogey might be raised, someone might be laid off, or the supervisor might ball out the slow arm. This was a quote. Note: the bogey was the goal set by management, and it was actually 7,312 wire connections a day. Few workers would reach such a goal. Well, you see, if they start turning out around 7,300 a day over a period of weeks, and if three of them do it, then they can lay one of the men off, because three men working at that speed can do as much as four men working at the present rate. This was a quote. It is unfair to work faster and be more productive than other workers, because such behavior will ultimately hurt the other employees. The work should be shared so nobody loses their job. That is, it is unfair and counterproductive to compete with other workers by trying to work as fast as possible. The proper behavior is cooperation, which means working at a moderate rate that does not put other workers at a disadvantage. This belief can be inferred from many of the quotes from the Hawthorne studies, including the following discussion of a subculture deviant. W6 talking about a relative of his who worked in the plant. She gets in here early and gets ahead and makes up a lot of parts so that when the rest of the girls start in, she's already got a whole lot stacked up. In that way, she turns out a great deal of work. She's money greedy. That's what's the matter with her, and they shouldn't allow that. All she does is spoil the rate for the rest of the girls. This was a quote. And how does she do that? This was a quote. W6 by turning out so much. When they see her making so much money, they cut the rate. This was a quote. If a worker violates the above rules, he or she will be punished by one or more of the workers. This can include verbal criticism, or even mild physical punishment, such as a bing. This was a quote, which is a controlled form of physical aggression, where one individual strikes another in the upper arm. This is apparent from the following. If you don't quit work, I'll bing you. This was a quote. W8 struck W6 and finally chased him around the room. Obs a few minutes later. What's the matter, W6, won't he let you work? This was a quote. W6, no. I'm all through though. I've got enough done. This was a quote. Workers that obey the restrictive production norms of the subculture will be accepted and liked by their fellow workers. This is apparent from the following. The fellows who loaf along are liked better than anybody else. Some of them take pride in turning out as little work as they can and making the boss think they're turning out a whole lot. They think it's smart. This was a quote. Organizational culture and subculture is an analogy to societal culture. What is culture? To understand organizational culture better, we can look at an organization as a tiny society, with its own culture and subcultures. We can think of an organizational culture as a microcosm of a larger society. Such an organizational society will have its own set of assumptions, attitudes, norms, fantasies, values, ways of evaluating, ways of perceiving reality, or any other type of mental imagery or data that is related to the organization's society. And just like a larger society, it will have its own behavior patterns stemming from the basic beliefs of the culture. Of course, organizational cultures are not as complex as a true societal culture. Organizational cultures generally do not have their own written and spoken languages, governments, or religions, but they might have their own jargon, rules, and beliefs. It can take a new employee only a few months to master the ideas and behaviors associated with an organizational culture. Compare this with the many years that it takes for an individual to master the basic principles, including language and behavior patterns of a true societal culture. One can make a good argument, based on the above, that organizational cultures are not really cultures. They are subcultures of the larger society. This idea becomes apparent when we consider that organizational cultures do not deal with all aspects of life, as is the case with a societal culture. They do not pass on their cultural heritage from parent to child, generation after generation. Organizational cultures are generally restricted to a specific work environment. If the individual obtains employment at another organization, she will quickly develop the beliefs and behavior patterns of the new work environment. However, in spite of the above, the concept of organizational culture and subculture are highly useful. This will become apparent in the following paragraphs. Other models and ideas in relation to organizational culture. Robbins presents pages 681 an interesting conceptualization of organizational culture, which is based on seven primary characteristics that, in aggregate, capture the essence of an organization's culture. This was a quote that is, the seven characteristics can be used to describe an organizational culture, by stating the characteristic and the relative strength of that characteristic. The seven components are as follows. 1. Innovation and risk-taking. The degree to which employees are encouraged to be innovative and take risks. This was a quote. This trait relates to creativity, and it is a necessary component for innovative development of new technologies. That is, risk-taking is an essential part of experimentation and research. An organization that has this trait to a high degree probably would not consider a negative outcome of a formal or informal experiment or a trial a failure. They would probably consider it as a learning experience or a ruling out of certain possibilities. That is, when any type of experiment or trial is carried out, a positive or negative result provides needed information for further research and development. Thus, there is no reason to consider a negative to be a failure, from this perspective. A high level of the above trait would probably be beneficial in any company that must compete by developing new technologies and products, such as manufacturers of software, computer electronics, drugs, medical instruments, etc. A high level of this trait would probably be counterproductive for small organizations that market a traditional product and do not compete on the basis of product development. Examples are established Chinese restaurants and check cashing services. 2. Attention to detail. The degree to which employees are expected to exhibit precision, analysis, and attention to detail. This was a quote. This trait relates to carefully carrying out precision work. This is extremely important in the technological industries, such as in electronics and drug manufacturing, where lack of attention to detail can mean a useless product at best. For some industries, such as the automobile and drug or chemical manufacturers, lack of attention to detail can result in injuries or fatalities. This trait is not particularly important for organizations that are engaged in sales, especially if the organization is a discount store. It is not extremely critical if merchandise is not displayed in an optimum way, but in some cases this might reduce the rate of sales. 3. Outcome orientation. The degree to which management focuses on results or outcomes rather than on the techniques and processes used to achieve these outcomes. This was a quote. If this trait is not coupled with ethical restraints, it can result in serious legal problems for management and its employees. For example, a company can achieve goals partly or totally by illegal means, if this trait is not restrained with an adequate degree of ethical standards. However, the trait can be potentially useful in any company that needs a high degree of creative and innovative input. For example, it is often possible to find more efficient ways of producing chemical compounds and electronic components by developing new technologies. The opposite of this trait is an organization that has strict bureaucratic rules and precise ways of doing things. This can greatly reduce efficiency, as well as creativity and product innovation. 4. People orientation. The degree to which management decisions take into consideration the effect of outcomes on people within the organization. This was a quote. A high degree of this trait will essentially mean a humanistic environment. This trait is probably highly useful in organizations that have a great deal of difficulty finding qualified employees, such as an industry that needs accountants, computer programmers, engineers, scientists, and other professionals. A low level of this trait might benefit small manufacturing industries that hire unskilled workers on a seasonal basis. A very low level of the trait might also be functional, from a business perspective, for the farm industry, where migrant workers are hired on a seasonal basis. 5. Team orientation. The degree to which work activities are organized around teams rather than individuals. This was a quote. This concept is used in many Japanese companies. Many modern American organizations started to use a team orientation in recent times. The relative degree of rationality of this trait probably depends on the type of industry, the societal culture that the workers come from, and the individual personalities of the employees. Some people do not like to work in teams, or they do not have the communication skills or personality traits that are needed for teamwork. 6. Aggressiveness. The degree to which people are aggressive and competitive rather than easygoing. This was a quote. This trait relates partly to the degree of competition versus cooperation. A culture that facilitates competition between employees is likely to facilitate some type of aggressive behavior. This is especially the case if the work environment is very frustrating. However, such behaviors can be highly functional in certain environments, if it involves each worker trying to outperform the other. Appropriate aggression focused on the organization's competitors can also be functional. Aggressiveness can be dysfunctional in environments that require carefully coordinated teamwork. If the aggressiveness is inappropriate, involving verbal or physical attack, it is certainly dysfunctional in any type of organizational environment. Cultures that are at the other extreme, easygoing, most likely have a belief system that relates to cooperation and sensitivity to the feelings of others. 7. Stability. The degree to which organizational activities emphasize maintaining the status quo in contrast to growth. This was a quote. There is always a risk in change and growth. This might be more the case for some industries than for others. In industries where technology does not change significantly, such as a Chinese restaurant, a high level of this trait might be functional. Stability might be a dysfunctional cultural trait for industries that exist in unstable environments, which involve continuously changing circumstances. A good example is found in the computer industry. Computer hardware and software industries are good candidates for change and growth. In fact, these industries are forced to change continuously to keep up with the new technologies. The 7 traits, delineated above, do not seem to describe all organizational cultures adequately. I would add the following to the list. 8. An ethical focus. The degree to which management is concerned with ethical standards. Some organizations are totally focused on ethical standards, such as the Catholic Church, as well as other religious institutions. At the other extreme, there are organizations that have very little concern for ethics, such as organized criminal groups. In between these two extremes lie the typical organization, which will generally follow the law and maintain reasonably high ethical standards, but under some conditions might focus on profits at the expense of the well-being of the environment and human beings in general. 9. Profit orientation. The degree to which management is concerned with profits. Some organizations exist only to make a profit for their owners or stockholders. They see themselves only as money-making enterprises that exist for the purpose of making a profit. There are organizations that are just the opposite. Such organizations are non-profit institutions that were created to satisfy a specific need in society. There are many organizations that are more or less in between these extremes. They make a profit, but they do not maximize their profit at the expense of the employees or customers. These organizations see themselves as serving stockholders, employees, and consumers. 10. Consumer orientation. The degree to which management is concerned with the satisfaction of the consumers. Some organizations focus much attention on satisfying the needs of the consumer. If they are profit-making organizations, they assume that the most effective way to make a high profit is to satisfy their customers. In general, the amount of consumer orientation can range from an extremely high level to a relatively low level depending on the organization. 11. Employee orientation. The degree to which management is concerned with the satisfaction of the employees. This factor is likely to be present when the workers have much power, such as when the employees are professionals who are in short supply. 12. Friendliness. The degree to which employees appear to be friendly and sociable with each other and with customers. There are organizations that convey a very friendly atmosphere. When you enter such a facility, you see people casually talking with each other, with friendly smiles on their faces. If you ask an employee a question, you get a polite smile and a friendly response. There are organizations that are just the opposite. When you enter such a facility, you see serious looks on the employees' faces. They seem irritable, unfriendly, and preoccupied with their own problems and concerns. And of course, most organizations are somewhere in between these extremes. 13. Degree of social formality. Some organizations are highly formal in the way the employees dress, talk, and behave. Some organizations are just the opposite. The employees dress in casual clothes, they talk in a highly informal way, and they behave in a casual and natural manner. 14. The degree of intelligence used in carrying out tasks. Some organizations perform tasks in a highly intelligent manner. This relates to maximizing the chances of reaching the organizational goals, with the greatest level of efficiency and the lowest level of risk. This relates to the application of excellent management, in relation to all the tasks performed by the organization and its employees. It can also relate to highly intelligent and self-disciplined employees who know how and are willing to perform the tasks in an intelligent manner. There are organizations that are just the opposite of the above. They perform tasks essentially in a stupid manner. This will interfere with achieving organizational goals, and it will result in unnecessary risks, which can result in unnecessary failures, money losses, and accidents. Probably, most organizations are somewhere in between these extremes. They perform their primary tasks in a highly intelligent manner, but they also perform some of their tasks without careful thought or consideration. Occasionally, this can lead to severe financial problems, such as when a company fails to evaluate intelligently the risks and expenses it faces. 15. Trust. Some organizations appear to trust their employees. That is, the atmosphere projected by management and the employees is mutual trust. This attitude might also involve a high degree of trust of customers. Some organizations are just the opposite. Management is in effect paranoid, or highly distrustful of employees. The atmosphere conveyed in such organizations is general suspicion toward employees, which is likely to manifest in careful supervision. This general suspicion might also be focused on customers and the outside environment in some cases, which can involve an excessive number of security guards. Most organizations are somewhere in between these extremes. 16. The emphasis on maintaining prestige or status. Some organizations spend huge sums of money maintaining a proper image. This can involve careful decoration of facilities, and teaching or coaxing employees how to communicate with the public. In addition, it is most likely to develop a massive public relations effort, including advertising in the mass media, such as television, radio, newspapers, magazines, etc. There are companies that are just the opposite of the above. They give little, if any, attention to their image. Such companies may focus on their services and products, and not worry about their image. The 16 traits, discussed above, might be quite useful for any individual who is looking for an organizational setting that she will fit in well with, such as for a job, schooling, or a recreational club. That is, the person can rate themselves on the above 16 traits, using a scale from minus 10 to plus 10, to determine their personal cultural preferences. A minus number indicates the opposite of the trait in question. The higher the positive number, the stronger the trait. After rating yourself on the scale, then rate the cultures of various organizations. Then try to find the organization that matches your traits. A careful examination of the traits discussed above suggests an interesting insight. The traits can delineate a culture based on the different management styles that Douglas M.C. Greger delineated, which consist of two belief systems called Theory X and Theory Y. In addition, the traits can also delineate the management style delineated by William Giauchi, which is Theory Z. These managerial styles are essentially based on beliefs of the managers, which can affect or determine the organizational culture that manifests throughout the organization. This idea is outlined below. A management that believes in Theory X has a negative attitude toward the employees. Such a management believes that most employees tend to dislike work, are lazy, have little ambition, will avoid doing their job if they can get away with it, are intellectually limited, and generally lack creative potential. Thus, the management that believes in Theory X concludes that employees must be carefully supervised and threatened with punishment to motivate them to do their jobs. Managers with this belief generally will not consult with the employees they supervise. They will just give orders. Thus, a Theory X culture can be delineated by a low level of 1 innovation and risk-taking, 3 outcome orientation, 5 team orientation, 11 employee orientation, 12 friendliness, 15 trust. A management that believes in Theory Y thinks in a way that is essentially the opposite of the above. They believe that employees basically like work, can learn to accept and like responsibility, are relatively intelligent, are potentially creative, are capable of self-discipline, and can manage their own work. Thus, a management that believes in Theory Y concludes that employees need to be treated well, they need relatively little supervision, and do not need much guidance. A management that believes in Theory Y is likely to consult with the employees before making final decisions. Thus, a Theory Y culture can be delineated by a high level of 1 innovation and risk-taking, 3 outcome orientation, 11 employee orientation, 12 friendliness, 15 trust. The management style called Theory Z, which is popular in Japan, incorporate certain concepts that relate to Japanese culture. When management believes in theory Z, they consider the capabilities, the judgment, and the power of groups to be of utmost importance and utility. They believe that generally a group has more knowledge, experience, and creativity than an individual manager. A management that believes in theory Z tries to create an environment of openness, trust, and group involvement in organizational affairs. The employees are treated as valuable members of the organization and group, and they are usually never fired. Thus, a management that believes in theory Z will consult the group to deal with managerial problems. They often have regular meetings with a group of workers to improve production quality and cut costs. The managers who accept theory Z are also concerned with the quality of the work environment and its impact on the employees. Thus, a theory Z culture can be delineated by a high level of 1. Innovation and risk-taking, 3. Outcome orientation, 4. People orientation, 5. Team orientation, 8. An ethical focus, 10. Consumer orientation, 11. Employee orientation, 12. Friendliness, 15. Trust, and a low level of 6. Aggressiveness. The above suggests that theories X, Y, and Z, and the factors that comprise these management styles, can be used independent of any other method to delineate organizational cultures and subcultures. That is, a culture or subculture can be described on the relative degree of its similarity to each theory, on a scale from 0 to 10, such as in terms of the X, Y, Z values. For example, a culture that is purely an X culture would be represented by 10, 0, 0. A culture or subculture that is an equal combination of all three would be 5, 5, 5. A culture or subculture that is primarily a Z culture, but has some components of theories X and Y, can be represented as 1, 1, 10, etc. Alternatively, the individual components of the three theories, X, Y, and Z, can be used to describe organizational cultures and subcultures, such as in terms of the relative degree of employee trust, faith in employees' creative potentials, belief that employees are intelligence, belief that employees are motivated, teamwork, etc. In actual practice, employees in different departments might have significantly different cultural or subcultural environments, as a result of different philosophy and treatment by management. For example, assembly line workers and maintenance personnel might be exposed to a subculture based on theory X, as a result of managerial beliefs about unskilled employees. In the same organization, the highly skilled personnel, such as engineers, might be exposed to a theory Y subculture, as a result of managerial beliefs about the professional employees. Robbins presented another model of organizational culture, devised by Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, pages 683-684. This model has 4 general labels that are intended to be used to describe organizational cultures. The model does not have the precision or utility of the models presented above, but it provides some additional insight, and it can be outlined as follows. Academy. An academy is an organizational culture that essentially trains its employees and advances them to higher status jobs over an extended period of time. That is, the employee might start at a relatively low level in the company, within a specific field, and be advanced to a higher level as experience and skills improve. Organizations in this category generally provide considerable training for their employees, and generally prefer to hire young employees who just completed college. According to Sonnenfeld, IBM is a classic academy. This was a quote. Club cultures in this category place a high degree of value on commitment, loyalty, and prefer employees that fit in well with the organization. Seniority, age, and experience are valued factors by the club culture. Examples of club cultures are United Parcel Service, Delta Airlines, the Bell Operating Companies, government agencies, and the military. This was a quote. Baseball team. This type of culture values employees that are entrepreneurially oriented. It is an environment that encourages risk takers and innovators. Organizations with this type of culture seek employees who have talent, regardless of age or experience. Cultures in this category offer large financial incentives and freedom for the most productive and innovative employees. According to the description in Robbins's book, the organizations that are most likely to have a baseball team culture include companies involved in accounting, law, investment, banking, consulting, advertising, software development, and buyer research. Fortress. The fortress is an organizational culture that often manifests when a company is having serious financial problems and its future existence is in question. Organizations in this category may have had a culture that was very different before the financial difficulties. Organizations with a fortress culture generally do not offer much job security. According to Robbins' description, companies with fortress cultures include large retailers, forest products companies, and natural gas exploration firms. The four categories, academy, club, baseball team, and fortress, do not really delineate the fine details that relate to a true organizational culture. At best, these categories are extremely general, but it is perhaps interesting to try to put various organizations into the appropriate categories. Hellriegel and Slocum, pages 537 to 541, also presented four general types of organizational cultures. These categories might be slightly more precise and useful than the above, but they do not really delineate the fine distinctions between cultures. The four categories are presented below. Bureaucratic culture, an organization in which employees value formalization, rules, standard operating procedures, and hierarchical coordination. This was a quote. Examples of this type of culture are found in the city, state, and federal government agencies. The culture is based on formal rules and documentation. The primary values of the bureaucratic culture are predictability, efficiency, stability, and managers see their role as maintaining the above. Managers in this type of culture try to coordinate, organize, and enforce formal rules and standards. However, in practices, bureaucratic cultures are not necessarily efficient. Following the formal rules, that is, going by the book, can sometimes result in even greater inefficiency. However, in many cases, the managers and employees may be legally required to go by the book. A related problem of inefficiency in bureaucratic cultures can sometimes be the result of lack of understanding, by the lower level officials, of the highly complex rules. This, and other problems, can greatly slow up, or even stop, the functions that relate to the primary purpose of the bureaucratic organization. Clan culture. The attributes of tradition, loyalty, personal commitment, extensive socialization, teamwork, self-management, and social influence. This was a quote. This type of culture has some of the properties of an extended family or tribe. The clan culture is centered around mutual commitment and loyalty for both the employer and employee. The understanding is that employer and employee have a unique set of responsibilities to each other, which goes beyond the official contract of employment. The loyalty and commitment is achieved by means of a long-term socialization of employees, which include learning the norms and values of the culture. A high value is placed on people, especially customers. Consensus decisions are often made in this type of organization. Entrepreneurial culture exhibits high levels of risk-taking, dynamism, and creativity. This was a quote. This culture is committed to experimentation and the development of new products. The culture is focused on innovation and rapid organizational growth. Entrepreneurial cultures are usually, but not always, small to medium-sized organizations. Robbins points out that the 3M Corporation is an example of a large entrepreneurial culture. Market culture values achievement of measurable and demanding goals, especially those that are financial and market-based. This was a quote. This culture is primarily focused on the marketing of one or more products or services. Specifically, the focus is on sales, profits, and increases in market share, and everything else is of relatively little importance. The individuals that perform well based on the above criteria will be rewarded financially, and employees that fail to meet the performance standards will most likely be dismissed. The market culture does not promise loyalty. The obligations between employees and the organization are contractual, which means the obligations of each party are agreed on in advance. This was a quote. This can involve the setting of performance goals for each employee, which can be based on monthly, quarterly, and annual time intervals. Luthams and Hojets also list four classifications of organizational culture, but they are very different from the categories that Hellriegel and Slocum presented. These cultural categories, according to Luthams and Hojets, relate to the relative degree of risk and the speed of obtaining feedback in job-related tasks. This will be apparent from the following. The tough guy macho culture is a high-risk fast feedback culture, such as in the construction industry. The personality type that does well in this culture is usually young, prefers speed, is often individualistic, and likes to win. The work hard, play hard culture is a low-risk fast feedback culture, such as in the sales and insurance industries. The successful individuals in this culture are often high-achieving team players. The bad your company culture is a high-risk, slow-feedback culture, such as in the oil well exploration, and in industries that design and manufacture expensive equipment in a made-to-order fashion. The individuals that do well in this type of culture are usually technically skilled and can tolerate ambiguity on a relatively long-term basis. The process culture is a low-risk, slow-feedback culture, such as in accounting and routine manufacturing. Individuals that are successful in this culture are usually cautious, and they tend to be strict rule followers. The four categories, especially tough guy macho culture, might be more accurately described as subcultures in many organizations. For example, a construction company that has tough guy macho culture might relate to the societal subculture, the organizational subculture, and personality of the construction workers. Management and the other employees working for the company might adhere to a very different organizational culture. They are also likely to come from societal subcultures and have personalities that are very different from the construction workers. This idea becomes apparent if we imagine a very large construction company with its own accounting department, its own architect and engineering department, and its own executive offices. People that work in these departments are not likely to adhere to the tough guy macho culture. This was a quote. The same basic ideas apply to the other three categories, but perhaps to a lesser degree. In general, the average personality of the employees, especially within a department or job category, relates to the formation of an organizational subculture. Organizational culture generally relate to the beliefs and related behaviors that management supports, coupled with the cultural, social, and psychological components of the employees. The organizational culture is not related to a specific job category, such as construction worker or accountant. However, an organizational subculture can be related to a specific department and job category, such as the sales force selling the services of a construction company. The three different classification systems presented above, by Robbins, Hellriegel and Slocum, and Luthans and Hojets, can be used more or less as a single classification system that delineates components of a culture. This becomes apparent if you examine these categories, which are academy, club, baseball team, fortress, bureaucratic culture, clan culture, entrepreneurial culture, market culture, tough guy macho culture, work hard play hard culture, bet your company culture, process culture. However, even in combination, these categories do not delineate the many complex variations of organizational culture. Conclusion. Organizational culture is a complex phenomenon, which cannot be totally controlled by management or anyone else. It involves the beliefs and related behavior patterns of everyone involved with an organization. Thus, many problems can result as a result of deficiencies or excesses in an organizational culture. The following questions are intended to delineate these problems or potential difficulties. Can you describe your organizational culture in terms of a set of beliefs and related behavior patterns? Are the beliefs and related behavior patterns functional or dysfunctional, or somewhere in between these extremes? How does organizational culture or subculture relate to your problem? How can you define your problem in terms of dysfunctional components of either organizational culture or subculture? What are the primary beliefs, norms, values, and methods supported by management? What are the primary beliefs, norms, values, and methods supported by the employees in each department of the organization? Are the beliefs, norms, values, and methods supported by management the same as the beliefs, norms, values, and methods supported by the employees? If there is a difference between management and employees in relation to beliefs, norms, values, and preferred methods, does this cause a problem? If so, explain the problem. Are the beliefs, norms, values, and methods supported by management functional or dysfunctional, or somewhere in between these extremes? Are there any ways that management can improve its culture? Are the beliefs, norms, values, and methods supported by the employees functional or dysfunctional, or somewhere in between these extremes? Can the functionality of the organization be improved by changing the beliefs, values, and methods supported by the employees? Are there any organizational subcultures in your organization? If so, are the subcultures functional or dysfunctional from the perspective of the overall well-being of the organization? How can you deal with the problems that result from a dysfunctional organizational subculture? Can you reassign the relevant employees into different departments to neutralize the dysfunctional subculture? Can you change the beliefs and attitudes of the employees that comprise a dysfunctional subculture? In what way does the culture or subculture of the organization you are dealing with relate to the culture of the larger society? In what way does the subculture of the employees affect the organizational culture and organizational subculture S?